Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world with its arms wide open. I am Jake Mintz. That is Jordan Schusterman. And under this sunlight, welcome to this place. We will show you everything.
Wow. I didn't know we would be leaning into that. But you know what? The Rangers earned it. The Rangers are moving on with the power of Creed and Corey Seager. They are moving on to their first LCS since 2011. And we are going to talk all about that and the other three series that are still in progress.
Now, before we talk about the National League first and then the American League and the Rangers' embrace of Creed, I would like to tell a Creed-related story, if you don't mind.
All right.
So Creed is bad, and Creed is also good. Creed is one of those things on this planet that is good and bad at the same time. And my college team adopted Creed my senior year, and with arms wide open by Creed became an anthem for us that we would play in the clubhouse all the time. And so over the last 48 hours, as the Rangers have adopted Creed, or it became known that they adopted Creed, I have received like 1,000 text messages from former teammates about this. And I would like to quickly tell a story. Jordan, one time we were in Nashville with the whole team. I think this was after we graduated. And I paid the live band in Nashville $20 to play With Arms Wide Open by Creed in like a full Nashville bar. And people were not happy because it is certainly not the vibe. We were happy. The team was happy. They were not. Then I went back to the band and said, how much to play it again? And they said $40 more. And so I rounded up $40 more and I gave it to the band and they played With Arms Wide Open a second time.
Wow. So this is like, you know, Nelly's Hot in Here played on the radio 500 times in a row. If you know, you know. But in person with people booing and having a terrible time.
Correct. And so for that reason, even though the Texas Rangers took my Baltimore Orioles out of the playoffs with not a shred of mercy, that they have adopted Creed brings me an ounce of solace in these dark times. And I feel good that that is who ended the 2023 Orioles season. And so I sit here, Texas Rangers fans, with my arms wide open.
We will get to the Orioles elimination, the Rangers advancing a little bit later on in the show, but we are actually going to begin in Atlanta, where Jake woke up this morning. We are recording this late on Tuesday night after the Orioles have been eliminated, so that you fine folks can hear this ASAP on Wednesday ahead of the three games that we will have on Wednesday. But we are going to begin in Atlanta. Now, I know those teams, as well as you, Jake Mintz, have already moved on to Philly, but we have to return to Atlanta, Georgia, where we had an absolute classic. Now, for the first few innings, we had a classic in a different sense because Zach Wheeler was throwing a no-hitter. This was a very different game. The discourse about the Braves' days off and how they all forgot to hit at the same time was growing even louder until it wasn't.
We did not address on this show the discourse about the bye in baseball. And that is because we both think it is a stupid conversation. Mm-hmm. Every team in baseball would rather have the days off and guaranteeing themselves a trip to the second round. Every single GM would tell you that on or off the record. It's not even a conversation. I'm willing to talk about the idea of losing rhythm as a lineup, but we're not going to do that now. The Braves were fine to be able to set up their pitching. It's not a big story. What was a big story was Zach Wheeler, no-no through six, or sorry, into the six. The only base runner being a Trey Turner error, I believe, on a Matt Olson ground ball. He was dominant. He was outstanding. The first time through, they were kind of waiting him out a little bit more, and he was just blowing people away. And then the second time through, they were trying to be more aggressive early in counts and couldn't square him up. But the third time through, the Braves started to get to Mr. Wheeler.
Yes. And we had, you know, six strikeouts through those first two innings. I mean, it was just somehow the Braves looked even worse than they did in the first game. And Wheeler was like, all right, here we go. The Phillies had scored in the top of the first. They add on a couple. They're up 3-0 and now 4-0 after five. But as you mentioned, it was only a matter of time. And when Ronald Acuña Jr. draws a walk in the sixth inning, still no hits. But when you get Acuña on base, everything starts to feel a little bit different. It is really that simple. We know now, did Zach Wheeler forget how to pitch because he was worried about Acuña stealing second when they were up before nothing? No. But it is undeniable that the guy with 74 steals is going to take your attention at least a little bit more. So what happens next after Ozzie Albies comes to the plate?
Ozzie Albies ropes a base hit down the right field line. A great example of a single that should move most runners from first to third, right? But not a double and not from first to home. However, on the throw back into the infield, Trey Turner lazily stabs at the ball. It pops off of the heel of his glove and into the air. Ronald Acuña sees the opportunity and races home for the first run of the game for the Braves and the first run of the series for the Braves. And that was the spark. Travis d'Arnaud said it after the game. To get the momentum rolling in the right direction was huge for them. Momentum exists. I'm pro-mo. Okay. I'm a big vibes guy. I understand that there are maybe some more statistically inclined people out there who poo-poo it. That's fine. Let's get a beer and talk it out. However, for me, it makes a big deal. Next inning, Travis d'Arnaud, two-run bomb off of Wheeler on a hanging slider to cut the lead to one. Phillies go to the pen. In comes Jose Alvarado. He gets out of the inning, starts the next inning, gets an out, and they go to Jeff Hoffman. Eventually, Jeff Hoffman versus Austin Riley with a runner on third.
Yes.
And this was the key moment of the game.
Yes. Key moment indeed, as we will be hearing from Mr. Franklin Mirabal on many Elise broadcasts this Dominican Winter League Series. Key moment of the game. Here it was, Austin Riley. Now, we should mention, first thing he does when he comes in the game is hit Acuña with a pitch. So once again, we have Mr. Acuña on base, and we're starting to feel things, okay? Albies grounds out, Acuña goes to second, Acuña steals third. All right, so that happens right before Riley in an incredible at-bat, which I don't know how many pitches it was.
It was just your regular six-pitch at-bat.
Yep, six-pitch at-bat, and Jeff Hoffman throws a slider that just doesn't get down quite enough. And even though, as you talked and confirmed with Austin Riley after, he wasn't necessarily sitting on the slider, it was in a place that a hitter as good as Austin Riley could still do damage. He hits it, and it's up in the air for quite a while, and it is right down the line. But there, and this is the other thing, probably different experience for me. Like, when he hit it when you were sitting in the press box, did you know it was a homer immediately?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Because on TV, they panned up so high so quickly to the way that it normally is like a pop-up, especially when it's down the line. And the call was so good. Brian Anderson, by the way, my goodness,
amazing.
What an incredible broadcaster.
Amazing.
So, so, so good. And he crushed it. You know, Marsh runs out of room and it just plops into the bullpen. And I can imagine that was the loudest moment you had heard. I know Philly's been loud, but that must have been something.
It was very loud. Yes. Yeah. My noise-canceling headphones confirmed themselves as a good purchase. I want to talk about the pitch selection because I think that was a narrative after the game. And that's fair. 3-2 count, going to a breaking ball in that spot, it's a little odd. Typically, in a full count, you're just going to stick with the fastball so you don't walk the guy. In that situation, you have Matt Olson on deck, left-handed hitter. Gregory Soto, left-handed reliever, is ready in the pen. There was an argument to be made before you threw a single pitch to Austin Riley that you put him on base. I don't think I would have done that. I think I would have preferred Hoffman against Riley to Soto against Olson, but it's not the worst thing in the world. And once you get to a 3-2 count against Riley as Hoffman, your job is to not give up a home run. And I know that sounds very silly. And the reason they went to the slider there is because Hoffman's slider had only allowed one extra base hit all season against righties. And Austin Riley had only had one hit, I believe, all season against the slider against righties, down and away location. And so the thought is, if Jeff Hoffman puts a slider down and away, here's what's going to happen. He's going to foul it off. He's going to swing and miss. He's going to roll it over, or he's going to take it and walk if you hit the spot. But execution trumps game planning. And that's what happened. Postseason baseball took over Jeff Hoffman's body, and just he didn't get the slider where it needed to be. You said it was not low enough. It was more that it just wasn't out enough. Mm-hmm. It backed up on him, and it just caught too much of the plate. And that was that, man. Riley into the bullpen, 5-4.
Well, that was not that. I mean, that was that homer, and you know, the Braves take the lead. But is that going to be what we remember? Yes. But also, this final play was truly unlike unlike anything I've ever seen. Okay, so Bryce Harper walks. AJ Minter had stayed in the game to face Bryce Harper. It was the first time, I believe they said, that Raisel Iglesias had an inherited runner the whole season. So again, normally you just go to your closer, right? Iglesias, he is the capital C closer. It's the ninth inning. We have a one-run lead. We go to Iglesias, whatever. But instead, with Harper coming up, they like the matchup more. They stick with Minter for one batter. Harper walks. Here comes Iglesias. Real Muto flies out to Michael Harris. And here comes Nick Castellanos. Here's a part of this play. Let's begin at the very beginning of this play. Incredible piece of hitting from Nick Castellanos to hit this ball as far as he did. It's a fastball on the outer half of the plate. That Nick Castellanos, again, Bryce Harper's on first base with one out. And on the fifth pitch, Nick Castellanos drills the 97-mile-an-hour sinker on the just perfect location. And it is going. It is going. And you can tell it's going because Michael Harris is on his horse, as they say. And he's going back. He's going back. And you're thinking, no fucking way did Nick Castellanos just do this in
this
spot.
So that's my thought. My thought when the ball was in the air was, there's no way he got enough of it to homer to the opposite field, like dead right center, right? Yes. Like all the way back. It was just a part of the park where it was just, you can hit a homer like that in the third inning, but in the ninth, it just feels impossible.
And like Real Muto, good example. Real Muto got it earlier to right center. He murdered that ball. I mean, that was, and it still only cleared the fence by a little, you know, like that you really, Castellanos with the pitch and with the way that he swung, it was just like, there's no shot. But there it went. Back. Michael Harris reminding us in one incredible feat of athleticism. Oh yeah, remember me? I'm one of the best defensive center fielders on planet Earth. Even though 60% of the scouts that saw me in high school were like, he should pitch. Michael Harris like, yo, watch this. Boom. Jumps, catches, crashes into the wall. Now, at this point, on TV, when he makes the catch, as soon as he catches it, we do not know yet where Bryce Harper is. Okay? We do not know if Bryce Harper was running on contact, even though, again, after the fact, we think about, okay, of course. But as soon as he throws the ball back in, and you see Harper trying to hustle his butt back to first base, you just understand that what the next 3 seconds will be one of, no matter what, will be one of the most chaotic sequences you've seen all season. And yet even that could not prepare us for what happens next. The ball skips past Ozzie Albies. Austin Riley somehow finds his way over in front of the baseball, scoops it up, turns and throws to first base in a way he basically never would, because when is third baseman Austin Riley scooping a ball like that coming from right field and throwing it? Like, again, just not a normal baseball play whatsoever. Picks it up. Laser beam to first. Matt Olson stretches. By far the most hype I've ever seen Matt Olson on a baseball field when he catches that ball. Bryce Harper understands he is toast. He takes off his, you know, his batting gloves and starts walking back. I mean, he knew it was not that it was a close play where they were going to challenge it, but he was just like, well, shit, yeah. They got me.
Braves win amazing. 5-4, even the series, sending it back to Philly. For about 16 innings, 15 innings, the series, the much ballyhooed heavyweight brawl was not particularly interesting. It was very one-sided, and then the Braves, in a flash, reminded us why they won 104 games, posted the highest OPS plus of any lineup in baseball history. It was outstanding to watch. Quickly on the Bryce Harper play, from a base running perspective, it's bad base running. It's not horrible base running. He should just be on second base. Right. You just stand on second and wait to see what happens. And from second, you can probably score all the way to home because the ball is probably bouncing off the wall, doing something weird. From where he was, and he slipped, he gave himself a little bit too much to do. That's not why the Phillies lost. The Phillies lost because they stranded 11 base runners. over the course of the game and couldn't score more runs and couldn't capitalize against the underbelly of the Braves bullpen in the middle innings after knocking out Max Fried. So let's just quickly spin this forward. Game three is tomorrow. It is mystery Braves pitcher against Aaron Nola. Mystery Braves pitcher is either going to be AJ Smith-Shawver or Bryce Elder. It will most likely be some sort of bullpen game for Atlanta. The Phillies will turn to Aaron Nola in what could be his final start as a Philly if the Braves win the series. The Braves, I believe they just obliterate Nola, right?
Yeah, I have not checked on exactly what they've been doing against him this season. You can definitely pull that up. The Elder versus Smith-Shawver decision will be interesting. You would have to imagine, even if Nola has struggled, you would be picking Nola over either of those younger Braves pitchers. But who knows? Who knows? We don't know jack shit about playoff baseball. We cannot predict any of it whatsoever. But I am certainly looking forward to seeing this one, as is everybody, right? This is going to be, I believe, 5 o'clock on Wednesday. It'll be the first game of three on Wednesday. But Jake, we cannot move on from the series just yet. We certainly cannot. Because now we get to the real main event of the podcast, which some people listening from the start of this pod will be like, wow, I can't wait to hear this. And some people may have missed this entirely. So Jake, you are, as we all know, been following the Phillies and Braves, and you were writing about it for Fox Sports. And you did that because that's your job. You wrote about this amazing game and the amazing stuff that happened at the end. And if you, again, you just heard me describe it. If you want to hear Jake describe it much more eloquently in written form, you can go do that on foxsports.com. So you can go check that out. And in that story, you did a little something called, you know, this little scene setting. Ooh, how about that, right? Little painting a picture for the audience who doesn't get to be in the clubhouse and doesn't get to be close to the baseball teams, right? Like, that's the job, right? That's the gig. That's the gig as the journalist. You want to make people feel like they know their teams and the teams that their teams are playing against, right? Okay, that's not that complicated. So you wrote a story and you wrote some things about what was going on in the clubhouse after the game, the Braves clubhouse, after this amazing victory. Have I said anything wrong so far?
No.
Okay. Do you want to take it from here?
Sure. I mean, yeah. So I wrote, I was talking about kind of the vibe in the Braves clubhouse and how it had turned so quickly for them in the positive direction. And there were just all the signs of like a happy clubhouse after a game. And one of those moments was Orlando Arcia, the Braves starting shortstop, more or less screaming. I think I might have said cackling or bellowing in the story because I'm a foofy bitch, but like, he was just hollering is probably the right word, at a boy Harper over and over again. I think he might have said it 9 times during the first 10 minutes of media availability in the clubhouse. And so to me, that felt like a relevant nugget that the starting shortstop for the winning team was not making fun of in some ways, but like laughing at the misfortune of the best player on the losing team, which is not that abnormal.
No.
Like, I want people to understand, if you've ever played sports or a board game or cards, there is trash talking that happens. If you play in like a pickup kickball game and you go get some beers after the game, you're going to be like, man, that third baseman on that team, what a doofus. Right?
Yeah.
Like, that is just part of competition.
In your clubhouse, right? And yes, it's a little different. And the media's in there, but the media's in there. They all know the media's in there after every game, right? And they're saying, I'm sure, all kinds of other stuff when the media's not in there, but it's happening. And that's the thing. People are reporting on scenes in the clubhouse after the game all the time. You know who else was probably saying, ha ha, Harper, what an idiot? How many hundreds of Braves fans sitting at Truist Park?
Like, anyway,
after the game, right? Okay, so that happens. And you throw that detail in the story.
I throw in the story, but before I throw in the story, I check with another reporter from another outlet who's in the locker room to make sure that they hear the same thing. Because even though I was sure what I heard, I would not have added it and included it, any detail really, of a player saying something unless I have it recorded or I have someone else who can corroborate it, right? Because I want to be able to back it up. I don't want to have to put myself out on a limb, which is exactly what ended up happening, kind of, because when I tweeted out the story this morning, I included that detail and I screenshotted that nugget and tweeted it from my personal account. And here's why, because it was a little spicy and I knew it was the type of thing that was going to get people to click on it and retweet it. And is that clickbait? Maybe. But my job is to write about baseball and I want people, as many people as possible to read the things that I write so that I can keep doing it and doing a good job. And like, if you disagree with that, I understand that. That's fine. And maybe there is some sort of moral gray area here. And I went over the line by tweeting that screenshot out. Okay, maybe, whatever. That's maybe where I erred. If someone wants to really throw shit at me, great. Then it blows up, like blows up like crazy. And it gets into Braves Twitter. And Braves Twitter, I'm going to be kind here. I'm going to be respectful, okay? Well, first it gets to Phillies Twitter. Phillies Twitter is like, man, Harper's going to hit 4 home runs tomorrow. Like, man, this must light a fire up under Bryce Harper.
Going to be motivated.
Right. And like, yeah, it's good bulletin board material. It's fun. And part of the reason I put it in the story is because I thought that like Phillies people would run with it and enjoy that nugget. And it would like add to the essence of the series, of the showdown of the rivalry. Braves Twitter gets a hold of it. And then it becomes more of not believing me that it happened at all. And that made me mad. And it was at that point that I muted my Twitter account and just took a nap. Because I understand that maybe I am not the most traditional journalist, that Jordan and I do this show, that we run a Twitter account together, that we used to basically just tweet whatever the fuck we wanted when we were 21 years old and in college. I get all of these things, right? However, when I am in the clubhouse and I am writing for Fox Sports, I am doing my job. And I am trying to be as reputable as I possibly can and as respectful as I possibly can. And part of the reason that I went and verified that information with someone else is so that it wouldn't bite me in the ass. And so what I was disappointed about at first was when Braves fans were doubting the legitimacy of what I said, right? Then I had a moment that I saw where someone responded to me like, why are you the only person reporting this? And I responded with a screenshot of the Washington Post article written by our friend Chelsea Janes, who was there, who heard this too, okay? Mm-hmm. And in the article, she mentions that a player on the Braves was screaming, attaboy. And the reason I believe that she didn't write the specific player is she didn't see the specific player and I was like watching RCSA it, whatever. And I like responded with a screen cap of the Washington Post. And this Braves fan responded, that makes me believe it even less. And then I kind of realized what I was handling here. Like what I was dealing with,
oh,
right?
It was an all-time like accidental alley-oop for someone to be like, fake news in your face. It was so freaking funny. Now, I don't blame you for getting upset because you were working your ass off to report good stuff, to report interesting stuff. First and foremost, I don't understand why this level of spice, which is very mild, if you ordered this spice, you know, at a Thai restaurant, this
you
is like a one
this.
Or a two.
You can handle this, Jordan.
I can't handle spice. I can handle this. The thing that I cannot, beyond the people doubting the legitimacy of it, which is, I'm just going to dismiss that because that's just, these are people that just don't know who you are. But this also gets to the thing that I'm fascinated by. Why do Braves fans care about this? If anything, you just had like one of the coolest playoff wins ever. I'd be talking shit about Harper also. Like, what is the difference? Like, you're hearing, I don't understand why it is upsetting to Braves fans that they want to be like, this didn't happen. I'm confused about the motivations from that standpoint.
Right. And when I reported it and when I tweeted it out, I did not offer any commentary on it. I did not say this is a bad thing for Orlando Arcia to do. No. I did not say this was a good thing for Orlando Arcia to do.
No.
Because in that situation, my job is to tell you the things that I saw in the space that I was lucky enough to exist in.
Yes.
Right? That is my job.
Yes. Okay?
That is my responsibility.
Yes.
And so like, I thought it was fascinating that Phillies fans were like, this means Bryce is going to go Super Saiyan. And then like Braves fans were like, this is a lie because we're afraid that Bryce is going to dig us a grave.
Like that's
in
the
days.
Part I'm just like, you're telling on yourself so badly in that sense. That's just so funny because that ultimately, from the Phillies perspective, and it's absurd the degree to which this quote, like it is a combo. It says a lot about how desperate we are for any level of shit talking between teams, even if it's not direct, whatever, and Braves Phillies and playoffs, whatever. But like we're running with this to such a crazy degree. You know, they asked Rob Thomson about it today, and Thomson says, really, I don't think anybody needs any motivation right now, but if that adds to our motivation, that's great. Yeah, duh,
correct.
Right?
Like, as the person who decided to put this in the story and put it into the public, it doesn't matter. It has no real impact. This will have no real impact on the entirety of the series. Yeah. Bryce Harper does not need extra motivation to try and beat the Braves tomorrow. If this never had happened and he homered like twice tomorrow, it would have been the same thing, right? And on the same front, like, it's not as if like the Braves are going to be tight because they're afraid of like Orlando Arcia getting booed louder. This has zero impact. It doesn't really matter beyond it being a fun little spicy nugget tidbit.
Barely to add
to the the vibe of the series, and that's it.
Which is great. And I will never understand certain elements of this. It is so funny and so silly, and you're taking it like a champ. But also people need to relax.
People need to chill. And like the thing I saw some legitimate like complaints back to me. I want to say like there were some Braves fans who were like, why did you feel a need to report this? It seems like maybe you're picking on him or throwing him under the bus. Like that is fair. I think that's a fair critique. And like I thought about, is this the type of thing that I want to share? I worry, is this the type of thing that I'm reporting if I'm in the clubhouse or other players on the team less likely to talk to me? Maybe. Sure. We'll see tomorrow. I don't know. I hope not.
Yeah.
Because like I'm not trying to make anybody look bad, but the guy said it in front of reporters, right? That's a fact. Okay. Yeah.
And that's the thing that's happening. And again, like that's part of the challenge of the job, which I think we're still figuring out.
Yes. And like I want to be clear, there were some legitimate complaints. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Like I'm open to honest feedback, and I saw some of that. The people who were quote tweeting me and saying, this is a lie. Orlando Arcia doesn't speak English. Braves fans saying that was unfathomably idiotic. This man, Orlando Arcia, has lived in America. He has lived in the United States of America, a primarily English-speaking country, for 10 years. And you don't think he knows the phrase attaboy? And Jordan, if you have spent any time around Latin American baseball players, you know that the phrase attaboy is very, very common and frequently said even by players who have less of a grasp of the English language than Orlando Arcia. So the idea that this was impossible because this guy who has lived here for a decade couldn't string two words together, you are telling on yourselves. And that took it from me being mad and frustrated with the response to realizing that I was like dealing with a different level of like this was not a conversation of good faith.
No, exactly. And that's why it expanded beyond the point, but we did want to address it at length because it is truly one of the goofier sequences that I think either of us have ever experienced. But we will move on. I don't think this will remain a storyline, but if it does, you're making it more of it than it actually is.
Let's see if they let me talk to any of the Braves tomorrow when I show up.
Stay tuned. We'll find out. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we are going to check in on those other three series. Not quite as much to say about those, but we do have some thoughts, of course. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbecues.
Hey everyone, producer Chris here with a quick housekeeping note about our merch. Look, in Australia, we love clothes and almost always wear them. If you're like us and also enjoy dabbling in clothes wearing, then why not consider some official Baseball Barbercast merchandise? Whether it's a jumper you're after, which you would call a sweatshirt, a cap, which we would call an old hair hugger, or a shirt, which we would call a belly wrap, we have it all for you. But that's not all. Do you also like to drink water or caffeinated beverages? Well, that's great because we have mugs and bottles to help you quench your thirst too. To buy any of this merch, go to podswag.com/baseball. The link is in the description of the podcast. And don't leave yourself clothesless this.
And welcome back to Baseball Attaboy. I'm Jake Mintz. That is Jordan Schusterman. Let's run through the three other series in the division series round. The Arizona Diamondbacks, holy shit, went into Los Angeles and they said, I'll have two games, please. Beating the Dodgers twice on their home turf to travel back to Arizona, Chase Field, with a shot to sweep the Los Angeles Dodgers in the NLDS. We talked about game one on Monday. Let's review game two.
Game two felt very similar. Now, good for Bobby Miller. He did manage to complete the first inning, unlike Clayton Kershaw. But D-backs, just a quick little three spot in the top of the first because these snakes are relentless. From the very beginning, it was like, okay, boom, boom, Carroll walk, Marte single, Pham single, Walker sack fly on a wild Outman catch. And then, you know, they put up a few more. Gurriel adds on another one. It's like 3-0 already. And now it becomes, okay, but 3-0 is different than game one. And it's like, okay, we got a shot here. Dodgers lineup, they're not going to stay quiet forever. But unlike the Braves, who did come to life in a big way in the second half of this game, the Dodgers, struck down by these miserable days off, could not come to life. Mookie Betts, another 0 for 4. Will Smith, an 0 for 4. JD Martinez gave him a homer off Gallen. But ultimately, Zach Gallen pitches into the sixth inning. They pull him a little sooner than maybe people expected. But that's because they trust. Torey Lovullo trusts the Snakes bullpen, as we've talked about and praised so much on this podcast. Sol Frank to Thompson to Ginkle to Seawald. Lock that shit down. And the D-backs take a 2-0 lead. Going back to the desert where they will try to sweep, as you mentioned. The pool party is waiting for them, where the Dodgers celebrated all those years ago. Maybe this time, the D-backs, we saw them celebrate at the end of the regular season, but this would be oh so sweet. I think about how much we spent the end of last season and then coming into this season thinking about the Dodgers and the Padres. We saw the Padres eliminate the Dodgers last year. Coming into this year, we thought it was going to be the Dodgers and the Padres, the Dodgers and the Padres. Nope, it was the Snakes all along. And while they still have to get one more, boy, do they look good. And I am just so impressed, again, with the depth of the lineup, the number of different guys that are contributing. Corbin Carroll reaching base 4 more times. Oh, man, what a player. His at-bats are sensational. And Tommy Pham. They put up a stat, I think like 4th highest batting average in playoff history, like minimum 70 at bats. Tommy Pham, sure. And the Snakes look awesome and the Dodgers look lost. And we knew that the Dodgers were going to have some trouble on the mound. Their bullpen looked fantastic after Bobby Miller couldn't make it out of the second inning. But it was too late at that point, and the offense just has not shown up whatsoever. And they better soon or they will be going home once again.
What was surprising about game two is that the Diamondbacks, yeah, they scored 3 runs in the first and pushed another across later on. Like, the Dodgers lost because they didn't hit. And heading into this series, we were worried about their arms. And that came true in game one with Kershaw getting sent to the Shadow Realm. But in game two, the juggernaut Dodgers offense with 2 of the greatest players and who just put up 2 of the greatest seasons in the history of the sport just didn't hit. And what's frustrating to me sometimes about playoff baseball is that we prescribe narratives to outcomes. And maybe Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman woke up yesterday and were really tired and exhausted and felt the pressure of postseason baseball and they were sweating so much that they couldn't hold their bats normally. But maybe baseball's hard and they just didn't get some hits because it's hard. And like, if that is the case, that's fine. Like, they didn't perform in the time that they needed to perform. But in 2 months when it's like, where did things go wrong for the Dodgers? Like, I don't know what to say because, like,
if they don't hit, they don't hit. Yeah. It's like, what are you supposed to say about that?
It's the same thing with the Orioles. Like, they just didn't hit game one and game three. So I think the Dodgers have not the worst chance in the world to take game three tomorrow. They do have the starting pitching advantage. I think that their offense is kind of due for one big tsunami before they get out of there. However, I like where the Diamondbacks are at. Duh. I did pick them before the series, and I think it's the only one I got right. I'm going to get right.
Yeah. And it'll be Brandon Pfaadt, who we know was not awesome against the Brewers, so it would not be surprising at all. Like, Mookie Betts homering on the first pinch in this game would be the least surprising thing to ever happen. And we will see if the Dodgers have won 3 in a row many times. They are not totally toast, but this D-backs team just looks so complete right now. I went on a Diamondbacks podcast today. Super fun and just cool talking to D-backs fans. You know, some fan bases that just don't get a lot of representation and don't get a lot of attention. And then to have this moment and to really be kind of feeling themselves is so cool. And it's what makes the playoffs great. And it's also why it's like, what, that's more fun. I know we want to grow the game and we want to have the big teams that we all know advance and whatever, but playoffs are never supposed to be fair. They're never supposed to make sense. And upsets are what makes sports great. So I'm enjoying this. I'm enjoying this D-backs run, and we'll see how far they can take it. Of course they will, be facing a hell of a team, whether it is the Braves or the Phillies, if they are able to beat the Dodgers. All right, let's close the book of the National League. Let's move to the AL, Jake. It is time to get sad about your Baltimore Orioles. So that sucked.
More like Baltimore.
So look at us. Back-to-back years, our favorite teams getting swept out of the postseason. I guess I got to see the Mariners win a couple games before the division series round. But losing three games in the DS sucks a lot. You lose the home games. You go to Texas and you think, hey, maybe there's less pressure now. You know, maybe the easy Texas. Nope. Wasn't going to happen. This Rangers offense, holy shit. Now, should we be surprised? No. They were basically a top three offense the entire season. Really consistent. You look at their OPS by month. Their worst month was September, and that was the month they hit the most home runs. So this has been one of the best lines in baseball all season, and my goodness, did they all turn it on at the exact same time at the expense of an Orioles pitching staff that had enough questions to be exploited to a troubling degree. And that is pretty much what happened over these few games. It sucked to watch. It was kind of a bummer that they couldn't give him more of a fight. But Texas is rolling, man, and Bochy is chilling.
Eliminated.
Is that the headline? Baltimore sign tomorrow?
Yeah, someone okay. Call me. So yeah, that's it for the Baltimore Orioles. Knocked out by the Texas Rangers in the ALDS, the 2023 Orioles. We can close the book. We can slam it shut. And this is a team where multiple things can be true. That is the theme of the podcast. That is how Jordan and I think about this sport, that multiple things can be true at the same time. These Orioles were a delight, a revelation, a rejuvenating force for a fan base who had spent so much time in the postseason wilderness, away from meaningful baseball. There are people in Baltimore who care more about the sport and the team. They care more now than they did a year ago. Way more. Maybe the highest percentage delta of any team in baseball. Right. And that's a big deal. That matters. That matters a lot. That's all true. This team played way out of its skis. The pitching was way better all the year than anybody thought. Ryan O'Hearn did a lot of stuff. That is all true. And it might be easy to like have this feeling of why would you complain? Even though they got knocked out, right? Like, you had an amazing year. You had such a run. It is better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. Do not cry because it's over. Smile because it happened, or whatever other Facebook post you want. However, there is a bit of it to me that it's a reminder that they needed more pitching. They needed more pitching in the deadline. And that's, you know, Kyle Bradish was really good in game one, and they probably would have given Grayson Rodriguez a start anyway at some point. But when push came to shove, Jack Flaherty was not enough. They needed more. And whether that was last offseason making a big signing, okay, whether that be Verlander or Eovaldi or whatever, or whether that be at the deadline, the Orioles did not get the necessary pitching, and it came back to bite them in the series. Yes, the offense was underwhelming in game one and game three, but when I take a look at this team moving forward, the answer is the pitching was not good enough. That's where they fell short. The offense is just a random roll of the dice like the Dodgers in any postseason series. But the pitching, like Dean Kremer today, just looked a little overmatched against that Texas lineup.
Yeah. But ultimately, when you spin it forward, too, it's going to be a big question about this offseason, because now you can't say, oh, we're still built. No, you just won 100 games. So it's time to act like you just won 100 games. Am I expecting them to spend $500 million? No. But they should be very aggressively pursuing pitching, whether that is free agency, whether that is through trade, because the offense is only going to get better. Okay. We know Jackson Holliday is coming next year. All these guys, like, I mean, guys like Westberg, right? Like, I don't even give a thought to Westberg. Half the teams in the league, if they had Jordan Westberg, would be like, holy shit, Jordan Westberg, foundational offensive piece. He's like the 10th guy you think about. And so they have so many of Kerstad didn't see a sniff of him, right? He was on the roster, I believe, didn't get a single at bat, right? So the offensive core is still so overwhelmingly impressive, but you gotta eventually get outs. And while they did it a lot this season, eventually they were stretched too thin. The deadline came back to bite them, and it sucks. Whether that's a lesson learned for Elias, if anything, it's just more pressure for this winter and certainly moving forward. But obviously a lot to be proud of and very exciting that now it's like, all right, shit, you're the Orioles. You're like one of the best teams in baseball, so you better start acting like it.
Jordan, what have I been saying for years about the Orioles?
Well, you've said so many things for years that, but what specifically?
2024.
2024, that's true. You've been steadfast, and it sounds like the Orioles were like, I got you. I won't even win a game. I got you. And they're like, we won't even win a game.
This team was maybe not ready for this. You know, they were a little bit over their head this last week. The inexperience showed, like the lack of, you know, maybe it was dumb luck, but it also just felt like they weren't ready for the moment. And that's okay. That's totally reasonable. Remind me of like the 2015 Cubs, you know?
Hopefully. But again, we see it both ways. We see a team like Arizona. They don't seem to care. They don't know any better, and they're rolling right now. So anyway, that's Baltimore. Let's talk about Texas. Wow. So 5-0 in October. This team just played their first home game in 2 weeks. And when they left home, they were like, sweet, we're going to go win the division. This is great. Oh, just kidding. We're going to choke it. We're going to blow it in 162. Now we have to go on the road for another week. And instead, they just heated up like we have seen them do many times this season. They had multiple stretches where they would win 6 in a row, lose 7, win 5 in a row, lose 4 in a row. Like, that was the Rangers, especially in the second half. So that they are now on another 5-game winning streak is not shocking. But I don't really know how you pitch to this team right now. And I think that is the problem. Now they are going to sit on their ass for 4 days. That's what they have to deal with, and we'll see how they respond in ALCS Game 1 against either the Astros and Twins on Sunday. But this lineup is just so... I mean, Seager is so good, and everyone behind him is so good enough that it is just a menacing group. And if Lowe's finally finding it, and, you know, Heim has some big swings, and Young's still batting eighth, it's one of the best lineups in the league. And you could say certainly the deepest and best performing lineup left in the postseason right now. So we'll see how the layoff affects them. But I don't think they're complaining too much because they're back in the LCS for the first time since 2011. And I am very happy for really just one specific Rangers fan. Shouts out, Casey. I never knew a Rangers fan before I met my good friend Casey, and now I'm happy for her and very much that. If they're about to play the Astros in the CS as a Mariners fan, that makes me want to puke. But guess what? It will be fantastic television. So let's get to that other division series before we wrap up this pod, and that is the Astros and the Twins.
I was really excited about game 3 today.
Yeah.
And then it was just kind of a poo-poo.
Astros were like, hold on. Hold on a second.
Hold on. Wait. We're the Astros. Yeah. Christian Javier, who started for the Astros today, you know him from movies such as World Series Game 4 no-hitter last year. He was incredible a season ago because of his fastball, a pitch that usually sits around 94, 95, but has other characteristics like carry and ride and spin axis and spin rate that make it very difficult for hitters to square up. However, for large portions of this 2023 season, Christian Javier looked very mortal, in large part because his fastball and the command of that fastball were below what it was in 2022. However, Jordan, let me put it like this. People who have depression, you know, you have good days and you have bad days. Mm. This was a good day.
This was
Christian Javier.
This was one hell of a day for Mr. Javier. But that's the thing. Like, when your shit is that good when it's on, it is you can fluctuate to that degree. And
right, like, there was a reason that he threw a no-hitter in game 4 of the World Series.
Right. But they, yeah, I mean, he's that good. But more impressive than Javier was the Astros' offense against Sonny Gray, who had been so good all season, particularly at not allowing balls to go over the fence. We're like, yeah, that's fine. We got this. Sneaky Astros subplot that I completely missed until I was just digging in preparing for the series is Jose Abreu kind of having an awesome September after four or five terrible months. I believe he had some like 30 RBIs in the month. They flashed a graphic at one point. I think this was during game two where it was like, Jose Abreu has 90 RBIs. And I was like, I know we're not supposed to care about RBIs anymore, but I'm pretty sure this guy has sucked for most of this season. And he has how many RBIs? And I know that's a product of their lineup, but that is just still kind of shows you how productive he still can be. And most importantly, he started slugging in September. And we saw that in this one, two home runs, both of them just absolute monster shots. Jordan goes yard again. Bregman homers as well. And Carlos Correa said after game two, Disha Thosar, who worked with at Fox Sports, she's fantastic. She's covering the series. She put this quote out after this game. This is what Correa had said after game two. I know what happens when they lose a game. I've been on the other side. I know the speech and the meetings and all the stuff that happens. They'll be ready to go. Yeah. And so you can imagine Correa is like, not that Correa is like, oh, we're doomed, but that's the thing. Like, this is a team that always responds, which, by the way, is how I felt about the Dodgers and why I thought I liked the Dodgers' chances even against Gallen in game two, because we've seen them bounce back. You rarely see the Dodgers have two shit games in a row, but we did. Houston, though, especially this time of year, my God. I mean, are they, Twins are still, you know, good enough to get back in this thing. They're going to have Joe Ryan against Urquidy in game four, but, and Minnesota's been so impressive for sure. But this is just this performance, just immediately, boom, four runs, deal with it. And then have that performance from Javier. I mean, listen, that's why we're going to say, like, we'll pick Houston until they are sitting at home officially. So very impressive for them. Disappointing for showing from Sonny Gray, but also with Javier's showing, like, Twins offense just was nothing. Just did absolutely nothing today.
Couldn't do a thing. I hope the Twins can give their fans one last blast.
Yeah, and maybe no more pitches to Jordan. Just not. Just don't. Probably don't do that. I mean, or do. Like, it is very entertaining to watch him get to swing, but it's not working out great. So he is. It's so absurd. It's like he's done this for three, four postseasons in a row now, and it is somehow he's still like surprising people. And I don't really get it. He is a freak of freaks. One of one, Jordan is. And I'm proud of him as someone with O-R-D-A-N in his name. Jake Mintz. I think that is
it. I want to go to bed.
Jake wants to go to bed. That's totally fine. I want to go to bed too. Chris wants to go to bed. Thank you to producer Chris for producing this episode, staying up late with us. We hope you all enjoyed this on this Wednesday. I know we have three more games that we are going to cover. Of course, Jake will be there back at Citizens Bank Park for game three. So we will cover all that in the coming days, exact timing TBD. But any final thoughts before we say goodbye?
Attaboy.
Attaboy, Jake.
Attaboy, Jordan.
I guess in that scenario, I'm like making fun of you. No, it is a genuine attaboy. Genuine.
Maybe that's what Arcia was like. Attaboy, yeah. Harper, like.
He's like, good hustle. You're great. Like, that was good base running.
You really busted aspect first.
You can email us at baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Rate and review the pod wherever you listen. We really appreciate the support. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. We appreciate the feedback. But thank you, Chris, for producing. Thank you, Jake,
if you're a Braves,
podcasting with me.
If you're a Braves fan trying to stalk me and kill me, and this is your first time listening to the pod, welcome.
Thanks for listening. Hope you can relax. It's all going to be okay. It's all going to be okay.
Around.
What happens when Arcia homers? I don't want to see the Braves fans being like, that's my guy. He's talking. Oh, Arcia back. In-. Like, no.
That's what I want. No, that's what I want. I want the Braves fans. I want the Braves fans to fully attaboy Arcia if he homers. Like, who cares? Whatever.
All right. The dumbest story in baseball this year has been covered thoroughly. Thank you all for listening, and we will be back very soon.
SiriusXM Podcasts.